May 25th in the year 2000. This is Raymond Gerler, and I'm interviewing Major Stanislaus Antos in his home in Kenmore, New York, near Buffalo. And this interview is being sponsored by the National Science Foundation, and the interview will be donated to the Ohio State University Archives and its Bird Puller Research Center archival program. Major Antos, can you begin this interview by talking about how you became first a naval aviator and then a marine aviator, and what led up to your becoming a pilot in Operation Deep Freeze, especially the kind of special training that that you had to have?
Okay. I was getting training from the program. And I was flying from places to places and landing on snow. And sometimes they clean the landing place by moving the stone, the snow.
This is in Alaska?
And sometimes they don't. No. We have Canada, we have parts of the United States and everything.
Mm-hmm.
When we're moving from one place to another, we will run into snow.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be very careful to land on that snow.
Mm-hmm.
And come in there as slow, real nice, and then no problem whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. How did you start off as a naval aviator, and you switched to the Marines? How did that come
Marines.
About?
As soon as they were going to put me as a Navy, the Marines came over and talked to us.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us went to go to the Marines to fly and do anything. So we became Marines.
What was so attractive about going to the Marines? How did they talk you into this?
Well, they're much better. The teaching is much better. And they don't slow down to do anything. If our people have to go ahead and walk around our airplanes and everything else, they have to go ahead and be very careful. And they have weapons full. So no one comes there and messes around.
Mm-hmm.
But the Marine, the Navy, when I go by their airplanes, some of them are sitting there and fell asleep against the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I would pick up the weapon. I would go right back to the man who was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And I took him out there and showed him.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, if you don't do that, they'll do something with you.
Yeah. So you had it in mind when you enlisted in the Navy and then the Marines, that you wanted to make this your living as a professional pilot? Oh, yes. As a military pilot?
Yes.
Okay. What, in, you volunteered for the U.S. Navy deep freeze operation in the Antarctic. Do you remember why?
Oh, yes, that was no problem. Because we had Marines over there, a lot of them.
Marines in the Antarctic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we flew, we fixed airplanes, everything. We had to go ahead and fill it up with fuel, oil, everything. And when it's time to go, we go. No okay. matter what the weather is, we go.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we get to South Pole, to land down there and leave everything over there, we come back.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back, if I can see where we're going to land, we have a place real close for landing. And we have a friend over there. He's got everything there. And he tells me, or whoever's there, come down now to 2,000. Because he sees us where we're coming from. And then I go down to 1,000. Then I go to 7. And then during my turn,
mm-hmm.
I go lower, lower. And then when I break out, I land
okay.
right there, and I land on snow.
Mm-hmm.
There's no problem there. And then when I run out, I turn around and I park elsewhere.
Okay. I think we're Are you describing the P2V7? Is that are we ahead of where we? Let me. Now, you left in November 1956 from Ontario, California, and flew to New Zealand, and you had a contingency of Marines and Navy personnel who were to land in the in Antarctica in a Neptune aircraft. What was that like, the Neptune aircraft?
Well, the airplanes, most of us, we had P2Vs.
Okay.
All right. And the airplane is very big and heavy. In order to go ahead, fly and take off, you have to have everything right.
Mm.
Fuel, oil, everything. And you take off and you get to your destination, because if you don't have everything, you don't get your destination.
Okay. So you volunteered for service in Operation Deep Freeze?
Yes.
Okay. And this was because of your interest in helping the Marine Corps, your fellow Marines, and also because of your previous experience in landing and flying and in snow and very cold conditions.
That's true.
Okay, so did you feel that you were adequately prepared for flying in Antarctica, which is a different kind of snow and environment?
No, it's almost the same.
Okay. So you had a relatively easy transition then, from flying in the Arctic to flying in the Antarctic.
Correct.
Okay. What was distinctive?
Okay. Let me tell you now.
Yeah.
When we are landing,
Can you describe for the tape the difficulty of landing in Antarctica, and what kind of special techniques you use to fashion runways, for example.
The same way.
Well, would you
repeat? The same way.
Would you
when I'm coming down and I'm being moved, I go this way and I come down.
Okay.
And I come like this.
But you made special.
For the wind.
Okay.
Okay. And just before I touch down, I turn over and I land. That's
okay.
It. And the wind's not going to touch me.
Hmm. But you made some kind of special markers on the runway?
Yes.
And those were?
This is a lot of snow in there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why we put these in on the side.
And can you describe those?
Well, I would say
they were colored?
Yes, they were colored. Beginning, we had yellow, and then halfway, it's yellow with red over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you're coming to the end, it goes more red.
Oh, okay.
So I'm telling them, or they're telling me, that I better slow down and get off.
Because you're facing the end of the runway.
Because if I go off of this, the aircraft could be damaged.
Mm-hmm.
So this way we just move over and come back, park, and that's it.
Okay. So the shadings from yellow to red let you know how far along the runway you were and at what point you need to slow down and then put the aircraft in reverse to bring it to a halt.
Yes.
Okay. Can you describe for the tape the P2V7? What does that stand for?
Aircraft are pretty good as long as people are taking care of it.
Okay.
And if we don't have any people to work, we go ahead and we work, no matter where we are.
Okay. Was the P2V7 a newer aircraft?
No, it's an old one.
Okay. And was it specially outfitted for duty in Operation Deep Freeze?
Yes. Because we not only had slides underneath, underneath the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go someplace else, you don't have any snow, you just lift them up. In flight.
Okay.
And then you've got wheels to go on.
Okay, so it was outfitted with skis underneath the wheels.
Yeah.
And was the P2V used for people transport? Was it used for equipment transport or both?
Yes, both.
Both? Okay. Now, you were the first to land a P2V7 at the South Pole. Were you specially selected to do this, or how did it come about?
Well, I was flying. I also had another person that was coming. With me inside, and he was high up, and for takeoff and approach and landing I took everything, and other than that they watched and they got real good to take off, come back, land. And
but how was it that were you the most senior of the pilots in Operation Deep Freeze? This is a special honor, isn't it, being the first to land at the South Pole?
Oh, yes.
Was it on the basis of seniority, or that's what I'm getting at? How did this come about?
Yeah. The first one that got down on the ground first That was our general that was up there,
mm-hmm.
and they landed over there. And they got out, and they put
a flag?
Yeah. A flag over there, they stuck it in the ground. And then they had to start the engine and take off.
Now, this is before your P-2V landed, is that correct?
No, they had a different type.
Oh, okay.
And when they got back on the airplane, they could start, but they could not move. So they talked on their telephone,
mm-hmm.
and they picked them up from where we were, and they sent another airplane over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it came down and landed. And they brought with them a couple of mechanics to get the two engines going.
Mm-hmm.
And when it did, they took off, and the others took off. And the Admiral was there.
Admiral Dufek.
Yeah.
Okay. So you said earlier the general, do you mean the Admiral?
Admiral.
Oh, okay, the Admiral landed first. Okay. And how did you get to land with the P-2V?
The same way, no problem.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you followed these other two planes in?
Oh, yes. By the time they fixed it up, they put things on either side,
mm-hmm.
like this, and within that, you're supposed to land.
Okay.
And the thing to do is when you run off, you turn around and you come back on your feet again.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come over here, you turn around and you park.
Okay.
And if you just go to the snow and don't make it and go over your own movement,
mm-hmm.
and then you can't move it again.
You get stuck, you're frozen in the snow.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, so the technique was to land and then circle around.
You just like this and come right back on the feet.
Okay.
All right? And when you get to the far end over here, you just go ahead and turn like this, and you turn around and you park.
Okay, so the plane is flattening out the snow, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That makes it hard, and it's easy to go on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, to compact the runway.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when Bird was making his runways, they were using shovels to pound it, literally.
Oh, yeah.
Pound the runway.
Yes. The bird was almost died.
Yeah. Okay. Major Antos, I'd like for you to turn your attention and describe the kinds of duties you had in Antarctica.
Well, every one of us have to go ahead and go from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to it, you go ahead and open the door and go in to see that they're sleeping. And if you're going there to the door and it's full of snow in front of it, you can't go in, so you move it out first. And then you open it.
Oh, you're talking about visiting the huts, the Janeway huts?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you have to do that. because if they have to leave, they have to go up, open the top, and then slide on the snow.
Because the doors are frozen shut. What kinds of responsibilities did you have in Antarctica? Did you supply scientists in the field? Did you move scientists out to the field? Give me a sense of your duties.
The sons, whatever they are, they came down there to work, and they would make a big dick in the snow. And once they go down into it, they start moving the snow and checking it and everything else. And the more they cut more deeper, they find a different kind of a snow, not easy to work on.
But what were your duties as a pilot?
I flew. Okay. I worked.
Okay. You flew scientists, supplies, is that correct?
Everything, yes.
To various stations?
Yes. Not only that, but we also take off with the smaller airplanes and work where we live. And we can move and land all the place over there because we have the skins underneath the airplane and wheels underneath the airplane also. So if it's snow only, they move the wheel up and they die. They go ahead and go down, they turn, go back on their moves again, and then when he turns around, he stops on the skids.
On the skis?
Yeah.
Okay. It was your responsibility to establish living quarters and bring in supplies to each area as you needed. Were you based in McMurdo, or where were you based in?
Well, we were all in Africa, not Africa.
Antarctica.
Antarctica. And we had all the foods there. And every now and then, we'd have a ship that comes over. And when it does that, the Admiral wants to go to it, so he comes to me, I put him in, I go down, and I land right close to this creature over there, and I turned around and stopped, and the Admiral went down to the ship and went in.
Okay, this was Admiral Dufek?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was there about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then he came, and then we took off and took him back.
Okay. Did you get a chance to talk, to know Admiral Dufek at all, or was he...
Oh, yes. Yes.
You have any thoughts about Dufek?
He's wonderful. He came into our place where we live, and of course there are all kinds of places. And he came in and he said, "Do you give haircuts?" I said, "Yes, I do." He says, "Will you do mine?" I said, "Yes, sir." And I put the garbage can over there with a piece of wood on top. He sat down there and I gave him a real good everything.
How did you get into the haircutting business?
Well, for one time, my father gave us our hairs. He cleans everything up. And I learned to do the same thing.
Oh.
So he wanted to, I did it. Anyone wanted to, I did it.
No, okay. So you were a barber as well as a pilot?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Very good. Do you have any other observations about Admiral Dufek?
Oh, he's great.
Did
every now and then he wanted to see things from the small airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I took him off, and we went. We were over the water, and we had a mountain on the left side, the same size, and we were going that way. And I was looking through the window, and I says, "Sir, if you look through the window, you will see window, not window, but."
Is this Mount Erebus?
Oh.
Coal?
Gold, yes.
Oh, gold?
Yeah. And it's straight down to the water. And you can't go down to it and work. Because if you do and slip, you go right down into the water, and anything comes on you, well, you're gone.
Hmm.
And he looked at it, and he says, "Yes. And someday we'll come back over here, and we'll get it out."
Hmm.
But he was a real good man.
Okay. Major Antos, you remembered vividly seeing Mount Erebus. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, Mount Erebus has
volcanoes?
Volcano.
Okay.
And across the water, we have another one over there. And then if it blows,
mm-hmm.
We know that it blew.
Okay. You circled the volcano with your plane and observed the manner in which the center of the volcano heaved up and down, so you saw this?
Yes.
Okay. And was this in one of your small airplanes?
Most of the time we did smaller airplanes, but we do use the bigger ones.
Okay. What was the advantage to using the smaller planes?
Well, no matter where you are, you can go ahead and pull the put the power on, back, and just come down like a bird coming down to land.
Okay, so you have shorter landing strips with the smaller airplanes?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Very small.
Okay. Okay. Anything else you wanted to say about Mount Erebus?
It's a nice place.
Okay.
Very nice. But periodically, it goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can go down and look around and start picking stuff up that came from there.
Okay.
And it's sometimes you pick up things that no one ever saw before.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall any other original flights of exploration?
Well, it's not where we live, but across the portion and a little to the right. It's real low, and it looks like it's got water in there. And on the side, it goes up on this side now, we have volcanoes. Mm-hmm. On this side is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we would land real close over there and go around this water and see what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite difficult to go ahead and put your hands or walk into it. And if someone are lucky and put something in there and pull it out and get something, well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, it's not good.
Did you fly scientists out into the field, or were you, you mentioned flying Admiral Dufek. Did you also fly scientists out into the field for study?
Yes. We had these, several of them that came over, and then we would pick the two up and land on the top and just left them there.
On the top of what?
On a hill, huge hill. And they were supposed to look around about over there and determine what it's like over there.
Hmm.
And they were supposed to stay 3 days or 4 days.
Okay. Do you recall any scientists in particular?
Well, those two scientists I took over there and put them down.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 or 4 days later, I went up there and I picked them up and brought them back.
Hmm. And how did they survive out in the cold with the tents?
They did all right.
Okay. Tents and stoves and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now you you wintered over in Antarctica and remained there until 1958. Do you have any recollections of wintering over? What the experience was like?
Oh yes.
Okay. What was it like?
Yes. And it's very difficult to walk from where you live, going down to the place where we normally work on vehicles or the airplanes. And if we try to go down there, it's, you can only go a part portion.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go with my friend over there, and the wind was so strong and the snow so strong that we were backing out and not walking with our face in our over there. So we went back, and after about 2 hours we tried again, and this time we went all the way down to the place where we work inside to fix all engines and everything. And we just went in there, look around fast, shut everything, and went back.
Hmm.
And then about 3 days later, when all that snow stopped, the people had to go down there and throw all the snow out.
Hmm. What was daily life like in Antarctica that you remember?
Well, you get up early in the morning. You get cleaned up and you go to get something to eat. And that road over here on the right side is a place where you eat and where they fix all the food.
Mm-hmm.
And we all go down there to eat, and then we come back. And some people don't go over there, but most of them do that.
Okay.
Because those people was fixing beautiful food.
Okay. How did you entertain yourselves in Antarctica?
Well, all I have to do is to fly, take people where they're supposed to go. That's it.
Okay. Was ham radio important to you?
No.
Okay.
We didn't have the anything was not. Listening to anything because you can't pick anything like that.
Okay. So, okay. Go ahead.
And
other people we've interviewed talked about the importance of ham radio in being able to talk to family in the United States.
Yes, they could do that.
Okay.
They had, you go down to the end where the people live and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
We have two people over there that go ahead and they shoot everything.
Okay.
I made a lot of articles from leathers.
Oh, you made articles from leather? Was this a hobby?
Oh, no, yeah. Yes, because when the creature was killed, the leather was taken off. And that leather was taken to a building that was not being used.
Mm-hmm.
In that place, there was a man over there that had died, and he was in a box. So we took the leather and stretched it on the floor, slightly off the floor, and pretty soon it began to get dry,
mm-hmm.
and pretty soon it's wonderful.
You mentioned someone had died in Antarctica?
Oh, yes. Yes. He was killed. He was in an airplane for the
He died in an airplane crash?
Yeah. The airplane has that thing on top that turns and picks you up and moves you anywhere.
Mm-hmm. The helicopter blade.
Yeah. And they took off, went like this, back and coming this way. And then it was so cold that they could not even determine the altitude from the ground to where they were.
Okay.
And they hit the ground. I was real close, and I ran like mad, and I told to get the priest.
Okay. This was the accident that injured Fridovich, Anderson, and Scarborough.
Yeah.
And Nelson Cole was the person that died in the helicopter crash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was married too.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about daily life? What about food? You mentioned food. What about vitamins?
The vitamins were good. Okay. When the ships came by, we would get some food from mm-hmm. them, especially meats, all kinds. And we have good food.
Did you say fresh beets? Beets or meat, did I understand?
Meats.
Oh, meats, excuse me. Okay. Okay.
And those people that work with food, they were good.
Okay.
It was so good that in the evening, one of us would go over to the people that were making breads. And we'd go down there and get one or two from them. And then we would bring them there and cut them all up.
Mm-hmm.
And we would sit there and eat it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Major Antos, on the subject of food, was there a concern about vitamins?
Oh, yes. There's vitamins that we get from the different foods that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they have in bottles that is just like it.
Well, so you use vitamin supplements to, okay. Was there do you think people were getting a sufficient supply of vitamins?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
As long as they're working and everything else, they're wonderful.
Okay.
And if they don't work?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, when the sun goes down and everything else, everything is dark.
Mm-hmm.
And in the dark, we still work.
Okay. Okay. If we can turn to reflection, what do you think were the high points of your career in Antarctica?
Well, getting to your destination and bring everything. People down that need if they were sick, we'd have to take them back to the mm-hmm. two doctors we had.
Okay. Do you have any disappointments about your time in Antarctica?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do you have any recollections of the people you encountered in your work in Antarctica?
Oh, yes. Quite a few.
Any specifics?
Most of them were very good. I know one that was there and did not work.
Only one you say that was negative?
Yeah, he negative. Was negative.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have a chance to... I'm getting the tape warning light, so it's about this time that I think we need to change the tape to go to the other side. So let's just pause a moment and do that. Major Stanislaus Antos on May 25th, 2000. We had ended the side one by beginning to talk about the people who were important to you, who you remembered in Antarctica. You remembered a particular person and incident in Antarctica.
Yes.
Would you comment on that?
Well, we have all kinds of people over there, and some extremely good, and some of them are not very good. There was one that was not right to be there.
You also, I understand, rescued somebody from a crevasse?
Oh, yes. Yes.
How did that come about? How did he fall into the crevasse?
I and Pullen were walking on the snow, and we had ropes, one from me to him, and we were walking.
You were, you were pilot. You're a pilot, though. Why are you walking?
Walking.
Walking for a specific purpose, some kind of assignment?
Correct.
Okay.
So we were walking together, and it was about 20 feet between us.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were walking, at the distance, the hole fell before him, Pullen, and he dropped into a hole. And I grabbed the rope and I held it real tight, and the one that I was holding, I put it into the snow and I wrapped it around it, and then I crawled up to the hole he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I grabbed a hold of it and I began to pull him out until he could get his hands on top.
Mm.
And when he got on top, he rolled over.
Oh, okay.
And he was happy.
What do you recall what work assignment it was that caused the two of you to be walking and then fall into a crevasse?
Oh, yes. Yes, because a lot of people move anywhere they want to. And we have places to stick like this.
Okay.
Don't come this way.
Okay.
And so we were walking that way. And We got him out.
Were you exploring the area to identify where crevasses were?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, because there were people that were many years before us, and they disappeared.
Hmm.
They were living in the same place. And the only way we knew that he disappeared was he fell in that hole.
Hmm.
And no one was with him.
Okay. So you're saying other people have been lost in the crevasse fields?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have any interactions or observations of the scientists? You said earlier that you helped to transport scientists into the field.
Yes, we had them over there. They a lot of them were digging in the snow and getting things out of the snow. And when they finished one place, they began going like this from the hole to get more stuff.
Okay, so they were digging glacial pits?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they were working there 5 days. And when they finished, they had quite a bit of stuff.
Okay, do you
and then they got out of there.
You recall what area this was?
Yeah, and then they covered the holes that they opened.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the people, I don't know.
Okay.
Because I saw them working.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have any interactions, or are there, any observations, if you will, of the military and civilian scientists? There have been books and articles written on the subject that basically there were some clashes between civilian scientists and military personnel. Can you give me a sense of how they got along from your observations?
Well, they came down. And what we did, we put them in the small airplanes that we had, and we took them down, and we landed there, and they got out. And I says, how long were you going to be here?
Mm-hmm.
And they says, at least 5 days.
Okay.
So I took off, and I made a statement, and then on the fourth day,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, I took off over there and I landed. They came on, they found some stuff,
yeah.
and took it back.
Okay. When you were at base, you stayed with your other with the other pilots?
Yes.
Okay, so there were quarters for flight crews.
Yes.
Okay. And these quarters for flight crews were separate from the quarters for scientists and for other military personnel.
That's true.
Okay. Was there much was there much mingling between civilian scientists and military personnel?
Very little.
Okay. So each sort of stayed with their own group?
Yeah.
Okay. But that all did that also go for divisions within the military, say enlisted and enlisted personnel and officers?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have them over there, and very few they get along.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask the question. I understand, Major Antos, that you had some personal difficulties in Antarctica, that your face froze over several times. You want to talk about how that came about?
Oh, yes. Because we're out there.
Your nose froze over several times?
Oh, yes.
9 times?
Yes.
And what did you do in those circumstances?
Well, when I got to the place where I live, I go up to the one machine that we have that gives us heat. And pretty soon everything goes off.
Oh, so you literally had to thaw it out. Was it painful?
Yeah.
Infection, terrible infections right in this diary.
You said you got a terrible infection from that process.
Yeah.
This was just from being outside, so there weren't any kind of masks or anything that you used?
No. If it's very, very cold, we all put something across our face.
Okay.
And just leave our eyes okay.
Okay.
But sometimes you work in one place, and then all of a sudden, the nose can't, is not working.
Mm-hmm.
The ice and snow is on your face, on these wonderful faces over there.
Okay. Let's talk about that. Major Antos, you mentioned that to me before the tape was on, that the religion was very important.
Yes.
To you and to many of the people in Antarctica. Would you comment?
Well, we had a wonderful priest. And this is what he looks like.
That was Father Darkowski?
Yeah. And this is what he looks like.
Okay.
And this is in a small building with covers on it.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like it was a Janeway?
Yeah.
Chapel in a Janeway?
Yeah. And we had, and here we had two well, he asked me to go ahead and put I made candles.
You made candles for the for the church.
For the church, and we had two in there, and then on the sides like this for people to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go in there and put the heat on both of them over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I put everything that he was going to use over here on them.
Mm-hmm.
To be warm.
Okay.
If it doesn't, then of course it's not going to work for him.
Okay.
Had to make these things that you see up here on flight, in flight.
Oh.
You see that?
Oh yeah, the there's angels in flight, is that what I'm looking at?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And he was running off. So I went ahead and I made a couple of these containers. And went ahead and made these over here.
Yeah. How often were religious services held?
Every day. Every morning.
Okay.
And Sundays. And when, if he can get on an airplane, he will go with us.
Okay.
And when we get there, he right away has mass.
Right. Oh, okay. Away.
And if they're on the ground, moving from one place to another, we land down.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes over there right away with two boxes. And he puts it on the top of the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So he was using one.
Yeah.
And they all went around by him. And he had everything done.
How well attended were the daily services?
He's very good.
Well, can you give a sense of the numbers?
There's quite a few that did not go.
Okay.
And after a while, I went and talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went.
Okay. We're looking at numbers of, 50, 60, or more, or less?
I would say, or say, that they would come over here,
mm-hmm.
and that would be between 45 and 55.
Okay. And were these military people, scientists, Navy? What sort of groups attended these?
Some. We're Navy,
okay.
But most of us were Marines.
Oh. Okay. Very good.
And in order for him to go ahead, I have to go ahead and put his the wine that's inside.
Okay.
Yes. And water that goes into it. So it was on one or two of the yeah.
So you had to make efforts to keep the wine from freezing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we're good. Colonel Antos, in this period, it's the very beginning of regular service in Antarctica, and at this point, many of the people in Antarctica are improvising to satisfy their daily needs. Correct. Can you give us some examples of that?
Oh, sure. What they want to do is have well, for sure they were getting breads. And they don't rise. But they're real good breads.
I mean, the breads didn't rise, or they had to do something to make them rise?
Yeah.
What did they have to do to make them rise?
Well, the place where they eat.
Yeah, the mess hall.
Mm-hmm. It's all warm.
Okay.
The food is there.
Yeah.
And they get up real early and they make everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very good people.
Okay. Do they have to adjust, for example, in the bread, the ingredients to compensate for the conditions? More yeast, less yeast, well, more salt, less salt, sugar?
Yeah. The some of the ships come real close,
mm-hmm.
so our man, our wonderful man, what goes, I take him down to the so that he can get on the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would be there about 15 minutes, and he'd come back with two hands full.
Oh, so you got supplies from the ships?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then got on the airplane. I came back.
Okay.
And there we had more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Major Antos was, you stated in an article from 56 to 58. Can you give me some thoughts about your experience there? For example, was it an enhancement to your career?
Well, I think it's wonderful. And it's tough, too. We had to go ahead and put rubber like this going at least 35 feet long. We cleaned the inside,
mm-hmm.
and we went, put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 behind the to put it down to the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two guys going with him. As he comes down right away, he stops, he drops one. He goes a little farther, another one, another one, another one.
These are rubber hoses?
Rubber hoses, yes.
Oh, houses?
Hoses,
okay.
Hoses, yeah. And then he'd come back and do the same thing. And in no time at all, it was all put together.
Okay.
At the down, over there, we had great rubbers, three of them, monstrosities. And they put them, one like here, and one like here, big ones. And that's where the fuel is coming, down there. And it comes from the hill. In the hill, there's a huge monster that has full of fuel. So the fuel is going down,
mm-hmm.
and everything is being filled. As soon as it's filled, they turn it over there and turn it in the beginning.
Oh, so you built supply depots with rubber hoses, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So from that, they have two big wheels,
mm-hmm.
and they would pick up the fuel and drive it to the airplane and fill it up. And the next one will do the same thing.
Okay.
So everything is full. So when they're ready to go, they're ready to go because mm-hmm. they're full.
Okay.
And they told us it would take us 6 wheels before we do that. We got together one day, and everything was done.
No.
That's the truth.
They said it was done in six weeks, is that?
Yes, they said 6 weeks.
Oh.
No, boy, we went and did everything.
Okay.
Because at the end, we had these monstrous things to get the fuel in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that it goes into the trucks.
Okay.
And then into the airplane.
Okay. Okay. In general, do you think that your 3 years in Antarctica was a boost to your career?
It was a boost.
How so?
Wonderful.
How did your experience in Antarctica as a pilot impact the remainder of your career?
Wonderful, because I flew all around anyway.
Okay. You're saying that it broadened the range of your experience?
Oh, yes. Every day we had a flight from where we were down to the big one.
Mm-hmm.
That they went ahead and put places to live, eat, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right over there. And then they put a thing all around it. And then going down from the snow down, they started to go ahead and go down and get the fuel, the snow up.
No.
And then they went ahead and they had water, because it went into a huge monstrous thing,
mm-hmm.
so that it would be water.
Okay.
And no matter how bad the wet is, they lived over there.
Okay.
And we used to go there. I used to go there every second or third day.
Go to where?
Down to the the farthest place away.
Hmm. Okay.
And the priest would go with me too.
Okay.
And he would have mass right away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, after you you left Antarctica, did you maintain your interest in Antarctica?
Oh yes.
How so?
Well, it was a nice place to be there. It was tough and rough, but it was fun to do. After all, I'm Polish. I can go any place and work any place.
Oh, okay. Did you became a member of the American Polar Society? You joined the American Polar Society?
You mean for the people that were have been there?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And you left Antarctica in 1958. Where did you go from there? You had another 5 years of service before you retired in 1963.
Well, let me think a little bit. And came back out of there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a problem, because it was much harder and more difficult than come back into the country, because if anything is going on in the country, you better fight.
Mm. What did you do after your service in Antarctica? You it ended in 1958. And then in 1963, you retired from the Marines. You recall where you were stationed?
Yeah. Well, when I got out, I went to work for Western Airlines.
Okay.
I was a flight instructor. And for Delta.
Okay.
20 years.
Okay. But you don't remember what immediately followed your service in Antarctica.
Oh yes.
Your mother died in 1959. What was your last service in the Marines?
Well,
you were flying Marine fuel refueling planes?
Yeah.
Okay. And that was the that's how your career in the Marines ended?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I left in 1963.
You retired from the Marines in 1963.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Anything else that you wish that I would have asked?
Whatever you want.
Okay. Major Antos, that brings us to the end of our interview. I appreciate your cooperation, and you will receive a copy of this tape and my transcribed notes, and certainly appreciate your cooperation and participation in this program. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay.